This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald. Here's a segment from our show, Kelly and Company, that airs weekdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
Rummy and I back to the program, and I'm waving here. I'm going to shout, watch out, watch your ears. Jeffy Ryman, you better be listening. A couple weeks away, I want to prove something to Mr. Ryman, co-producer on the program. Now, folks, if you want to reach out to us, call 1-866-509-4545. That's 1-866-509-4545. I'm kidding. I did know, but I'll tell you, hesitating like that, psyching everybody else out, almost psyched myself out. Feedback at AMI.ca. If you want to send an email, somebody from communications will get back to you. If you have a question about AMI TV, AMI Tele, or AMI Audio, feedback at AMI.ca. On Twitter, at AMI Audio. As mentioned just a moment ago, Ramya Muthan's with me. I'm Kelly McDonald, host of Kelly and Company.
Kels, we've all heard of, and probably taken as well, first aid courses for people, but we want to find out if there's first aid for our pets. So let's bring on Dr. Danielle Jeankind.
The human-animal bond plays such an important role in people's lives, and as a veterinarian, it's my privilege to help keep those bonds strong and healthy. I'm Dr. Danielle Jeankind, and welcome to Ask a Veterinarian.
Danielle, lots of things that people are embarking on or planning to embark on. You know, these are conversations and reflections we have at the start of the year as well. And one of these questions might be, are there first aid courses for pets as there are for humans? So, you know, we have other questions like, what can pet owners do for sick or injured pets before you can get them to the emergency vet or to the vet themselves? And you're going to answer some of these questions and more today. We're starting our two-part series on pet first aid. So let's go back to that first question. Are there first aid courses for pets?
There are, and believe it or not, but St. John Ambulance actually offers one. I've actually never taken it myself, but I checked it out on their website, and apparently they cover how to prevent injuries, human safety, choking, artificial respiration, first aid for skunk spray, which is a good thing.
Oh my gosh.
For sure.
Necessity.
Yeah, for sure. And they cover bite wounds, like if your pets get bitten by another animal, and somewhat surprisingly, vaccinations. If anyone's interested in their course, you can find details on their website at sja.ca. I've also seen individual vet clinics, and sometimes animal welfare or special interest groups offer pet first aid courses. I'd be a little careful to check out who put the course material together before you sign up for one, though. You know, if it was designed by a veterinary professional, it should be pretty good and have good information in it.
Wow. I'm fascinated to know what the gamut of pets or what they consider. Like you mentioned the skunks a while ago, we kind of chuckle, but that's one of the things that people encounter a lot with Tim Hortons cups, their faces stuck into them, just different injuries around our own properties that they can come up with, or other animals, and how to deal with some of that stuff. The ones that you could approach, well, I'm not so sure I'm approaching the skunks, but if you have it as a pet, yeah, I guess so. You know, so what are the limitations when it comes to the first aid for pets?
Well, I'd never regard first aid for pets as something you do instead of seeking veterinary care.
Right.
You know, of course, if something is wrong with your pet and you provide first aid, you should still call your vet and let them know what's going on. The idea behind first aid is just to maximize your pet's chances of survival until you can get them to the vet. And of course, you also have to consider your own safety in providing first aid to your pet. So lots of people regard their pets as members of their family and will sometimes take unwise risks to save them. But, you know, it's important to remember that if you get hurt or killed trying to help your pet, you won't be able to help them anyway. So really, your safety should be your number one priority.
Okay. Good to keep that in mind. So let's start with those safety considerations. What are some of the issues that we should be aware of when trying to help a sick or injured pet?
Well, you know, the first thing to assess is what's going on around you and your pet. In most situations, you know, there's little to no danger to people. You know, for example, a dog that was running in the park and broke a nail up near the quick is likely to be limping and bleeding, but that isn't dangerous for a person. On the other hand, there might be a danger to a person in some situations. For example, a dog that falls through the ice on a frozen pond, or one that breaks a leash, runs out into traffic, and then gets hit by a car. If you go after that dog, you could fall through the ice or get hit by a car too. So, you know, just be aware of these kind of potential hazards. Chewed power cords, be aware of electrocution, you know, exposure to toxins that could be inhaled or absorbed through the skin, you know, and in some cases, even exposure to infectious diseases. Fortunately, of course, you know, these situations are very rare, but if you can identify a danger to yourself, do everything you can to make the situation safer before you attempt to help your pet. For example, turn off the breakers in your house before touching a pet that chewed a power cord. You know, you could wear gloves or protective clothing to handle a pet that managed to get covered in something toxic, that sort of thing. The second danger you need to watch out for is actually from your pet. Any sort of painful injury is terrifying for pets, and sometimes they don't understand that you're trying to help them, and you don't want to get bitten or scratched. So, you know, in the case of a dog, if you have a muzzle, you can use it. Most dogs are easier to muzzle if you kind of stand behind their head and flip the muzzle over their nose. If you don't have one, you can make a temporary one out of a shoelace. So you just kind of hold the two ends together, start to tie it as if you were tying your shoes to form a loop, can drop that over the dog's nose, tighten it, wrap it around the nose a few times, and then tie it behind the ears. Dogs can't pant with a muzzle like that on, so leave it on only for the minimum time that it's required. And for dogs that have no nose, like a pug, or, you know, for dogs you can't get a muzzle on, an e-collar, also known as the cone of shame, can help to protect you. So once you get it on them, keep your hands out of the danger zone inside the cone. Cats can be more challenging to deal with, and an e-collar can offer some protection from being bitten, but can't protect you from getting scratched. The best solution for catching an aggressive kitty is to corner them with a carrier or a box if you can. Just kind of back them up against a wall or into a corner and work the box over top of them, so that they have no choice but to go in it. A lot of cats, if you really can't get them into a crate, you can take a big, thick comforter, drop it over, and scoop them up inside it. And, you know, their aim is bad if they can't see you. The fabric and the padding inside the comforter will reduce the risk of getting bitten or scratched. So you just have to watch that they don't suffocate, you know, but you just, you can use that trick to get them into a box if you have to.
Wow. That's a lot of stuff, good stuff to consider, that's for sure, man.
Our animals are going to hate us after all this.
Oh, man.
Doesn't really feel like first aid, guys.
He's laying there now telling Ramya, like, just forget about it. You know, like, just take me to the specialist.
Thank goodness,
please.
I've chewed up all the shoelaces around here. Yeah.
What was else was on that list to take care of? What are some other general things to remember when providing the first aid to a pet?
Well, make sure your pet is at a comfortable temperature. So in the winter, that might mean making sure they stay warm. So you can use blankets, coats, mittens on their feet. You know, if it's safe to do so, you can use your own body heat to keep them warm. In the summer, though, it might mean keeping them cool. You know, if you have an overheated pet, you might have to get them into the shade or into an air-conditioned space. You can use ice packs wrapped in towels or even just towels soaked in cold water and put those into the elbow and groin areas to keep, you know, an overheated animal cool. The next thing, of course, to remember is to try and stay calm. You know, well, pets are not human. They do react in response to our behavior. So screaming, crying, and yelling at other people in the heat of the moment, these are normal human reactions to stress. Mm-hmm. However, they cause your pet a lot of fear and increase their anxiety levels, and that makes the situation even more difficult to deal with. So, you know, if somebody really can't handle their own emotions in a crisis, it's probably best if somebody else who can steps in to deal with the situation until the crisis is under control. And the last thing to, the last thing to remember is triage, you know, which means to handle injuries in the order of importance to preserve life. So in vet school, they taught us ABCD as an acronym to help us remember triage priorities. Newer recommendations have changed those for vets, but I think that ABCD is still easiest for people to remember. So A is for air. air is very important factor for preserving life. So make sure air can get down to the lungs. So for example, if you have an animal who's drowning, pulling them back into a boat or onto shore would help ensure that. B is for both breathing and bleeding. So assess to make sure an animal is breathing by checking through airflow through the nostrils and movement of the chest wall. An animal that isn't breathing will be unconscious. So you'll have to breathe for them. We'll talk about that next week. B is for bleeding, and that of course needs to be stopped if it's major, but we actually leave that until after C, which is for circulation. So to check for a heartbeat and start chest compressions if there isn't one. Again, we'll talk a little bit about that next week. D stands for drive. The word drive is to remind you of two things: arrange for veterinary care or transport to the hospital, and to prepare your pet for transportation to the vet hospital. D is also for drugs, and I use it mostly as a reminder for people not to give a pet anything in emergency.
Okay.
So maybe I should change it for don't do drugs.
Don't that do might be drugs. Better. ABC and triple D. Okay.
That's right. The only exception to that would be if your pet has a condition that your vet has deliberately prescribed you emergency drugs to deal with it, like epilepsy, for example. In that case, your vet will have already instructed you on how and when to use the medication, so follow their instructions. In all other situations, don't give a pet anything at all, not even over-the-counter pain medications.
Got it. Okay. You're mentioning transportation. So this is probably something that a lot of people will, you know, panic about, or, you know, especially with bigger injuries, maybe bigger animals. What about transporting an injured pet to the veterinarian?
Well, cats and other small animals are best transported in a carrier or a box if you can get them into one. So as I mentioned before, you can kind of scoop up an aggressive kitty in a thick blanket if you have to. You know, maneuver them into a box, close the lid as much as possible, and then just gently start removing the blanket out by a corner if you have to. Small dogs can be carried in your arms or wrapped in a blanket. Large dogs can too if you have somebody big and strong enough to do that. Otherwise, if they'll allow you to carry them without struggling, you can make a stretcher out of a board or a large blanket. That spreads their weight out over multiple people, and it also makes it a lot easier to get a large dog in and out of a vehicle. So the trunk of a hatchback vehicle or the back seat of a regular vehicle is often the best place to transport a large dog on a stretcher.
That's got to be so tricky because of upset, the pain, the injury. I like you say, the more people you have, in that sense, the right amount of people, that is, sounds like really, really helpful. What are we going to talk about next week when we get to part two?
Well, you know, we'll get into some specifics of first aid for pets, you know, so we'll talk a little bit about CPR. We'll talk about bandaging, and we'll talk about, you know, poisonings, that kind of stuff. And, you know, if we have any time left over, we can certainly talk about, you know, minor things like skunk spray and, you know, trimming nails too short and then the nails are bleeding and, oh my gosh, right. What do I do?
And we've talked about that because we know so many people in our listening audience, of course, worry about that.
Yes, yes, no, for sure. We definitely get a lot of calls about that at the clinic too, you know, just about, oh, I cut a nail too short and it bled for hours. Yeah. What do I do? You know, so it's definitely something that a lot of people, you know, they worry about and that kind of thing. I mean, a dog will never bleed to death from a nail trimmed too short, but it looks like a lot of blood. It looks like a horror movie scene. So it can be quite dramatic to see. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is really awesome, Danielle. I mean, talking about some of these things and then putting it in context with other things that we've talked about, like how to make sure you're not going to cut your dog's nails too short and things. But
and the skunk spray, because Rum's got to worry about that with
That one I'm looking forward to. So we'll make time for that one, Danielle. Thank you so much. So we'll continue with first aid part two next week.
Okay. Have a good week.
You too. Dr. Danielle Jonkind is our veterinarian who joins us on Tuesdays. And as we said, this was part one of two for pet first aid.
That's kind of neat. It really is, when you think about it, something that so many people, I would imagine, would hear this and say, you know what, I got to do this.
Yeah, and I'm really paying attention to how different it is for smaller animals versus bigger animals, especially when it comes to the transportation, but I'm sure in other contexts as well.
It's something great to have in your mind because you're so panicked, I would imagine, at the time mm-hmm. of anything going on. We'll pause for a moment, folks. What are some things we can do to promote our own well-being through the year? Well, we're going to chat about this with wellness contributor Francis Wong after this break.
You've been listening to Kelly and Company. If you're hooked, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast platform. And be sure to leave us a rating and review. Or you can listen live from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.